And we have just a couple things we want to mention that are going on in town right now, and then we're going to get into our reason for the season show.
One of the things I want to talk about is the Bonner Community Food Bank needs turkeys. They're asking for turkeys to help those in need in our community so they can have a nice Christmas dinner. You can call 610-3144 or take the turkeys out to 1707 Culver's Drive, Sandpoint. That's out near the airport. They're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 p.m. That's when they need the turkeys. So they need 1,000 turkeys. There you go. That's your morning turkey report.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they can get those. Yeah, they go for to people that are in need. Another bit of good news, the Toys for Tots campaign is nearing the goal. Of course, we're very close to Christmas as well, so we hope they get there. The goal this year is $50,000. They're currently at $47,404. So if you haven't donated to Toys for Tots, you could help put them over the line this year. And, of course, that's a great program that provides not only toys for children in need, but also food for families to have a nice Christmas. And with that, let's talk about Christmas. We're here again with Colin Moody from Cedar Hills Church, Bob Evans from the Emergency Sea Church, and I'm just going to start right out. Colin, first of all, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Cedar Hills Church.
Sure. So Cedar Hills Church has been part of the community for about 14 years, started by Eric and Nicole Rust, and we're affiliated with the Assemblies of God. For most people, it feels like a non-denominational Christian church, and we have 4 weekend gatherings, 1 on Thursday night and 3 on Sundays. And our mission is for every person in our community to experience full life in Jesus Christ. It's a great church. I love serving there. I serve as the adult ministry pastor, and I've served in that capacity for about 6 years.
Okay, so here's the $64 question of the day here. Colin, for you, what is the true meaning of Christmas?
It's a great question. The true meaning of Christmas for me is that Jesus has come to us as God's supreme gift. And there are lots of layers to that, both as we look at the scriptures and as we look at tradition. At the heart of Christmas is this gift that comes not just to Christians, but to the entire world, to all of humanity, in the form of Jesus Christ, this vulnerable baby who would grow up to become the Savior of the world.
Do you think that's where the idea of gift giving, it's kind of a symbolic gesture to remember?
That's an excellent question. I don't know enough about that to say, but I think it's a great reflection of that first gift, absolutely. And I think for most Christian people, as we give gifts, it's a reminder of the gift that's been given to us. And obviously, you know, with the Amazon gift list, that can get a little bit out of control for all of us at times. But I do think you're right. I think at the heart of it is that idea of gift.
And there was other gift giving going on right around then as part of the Christmas tradition, the story of Christmas, and that's the Magi, the three wise men who came. Now, going back historically, did they show up on Christmas Day? I mean, the day of Jesus' birth, or and they came bearing gifts. Tell us a little bit more about what that tradition is.
Sure. I hope my seminary professors aren't listening because this is like the final. Tradition would say that, yeah, there was a significant gap between when the day of Jesus' birth and when the Magi or the wise men arrived. And that's actually those 12 days of Christmas between Christmas Day and Epiphany. That represents that gap between Jesus' birthday and then when the wise men came. I think going back to that theme of gift, just to look at what the Magi brought, these were pretty significant gifts. These weren't just things that they picked up along the way. So that there was a lot of intentionality behind that that reflected the person who they wanted to celebrate.
One of the things in the European Christian tradition, they consider from Christmas Eve until the Epiphany to be the 12 holy nights. And it's the night those nights, supposedly, when animals speak, and the veil between the spiritual world and the physical world is a little thinned out, so that if you have questions, it's a good time for reflection, according to their tradition, to go within. And when you think of the Magi, they're the wise men. So wisdom comes through, maybe, possibly, at that time.
Absolutely. Well, and I love that idea of that thinness. This actually comes to us from Celtic Christianity, the idea of that space between heaven and earth collapsing a bit. And for the Celtic Christians, that could happen both in a geography and in a time or a place. And so just to think about, yeah, that invitation to reflect, that invitation to slow down, I think that's really, really a big part of the season.
And the Epiphany falls on January 6th or the 5th?
I think it's the 6th.
The 6th, yeah.
And Epiphany is? Tell us what the Epiphany is.
Yeah, please. So Epiphany would just, it comes from this idea of revelation, of the wise men recognizing who Jesus
that
is.
That Jesus was from God,
yes.
Of God.
Yes.
So I want to circle back on the whole gift-giving question with you, Colin, but let's get Bob Evans from the Emergency Church.
Sorry, it's so hard to say.
Yeah. If you say it too fast, you lose the meaning, actually. Or maybe there's a double entendre there. Bob, for you, what is the true meaning of Christmas?
Oh, like Colin, and I appreciate that he really says that, too. It's meant something to me different every time that I have read the story or thought about the story, which is for me every day. And that's what I try to introduce to those people who come to the gathering that I pastor, is that for me, Christmas is the birth of a revelation. It's not just about Jesus, as a matter of fact. It is about us. And the revelation is to us and expresses for me in this absolutely beautiful, unhistorical story about not only does it reflect to us our spiritual journey, but reflects to us that God's grace is here at all times working within us that we may experience that graceful journey successfully. This revelation is about love for us and who we are as divine children of God.
That's great. I need to back up, though, because I meant to ask you, tell us a little bit about your church.
I left the church, a parish in Wallace and Osborne, beautiful people, but to pursue something I felt I was called for, and that is to expose a different kind of Christianity that has always been layered within traditional Christianity, but has taken a back seat for many years, and that is the more mystical side of Christianity. We find people like, Richard Rohr, who is becoming very popular, is part of that movement to expose the mystical side of the teachings of Christianity, and that's what this church, this gathering is all about. Emerge and see the heart of the new being has to do with our own path. And as we do that, though, the rest of the story of Jesus in Christmas for me is that we act that out. And in our actions is present that symbol we call the kingdom of God.
So what you're saying is the human capacity is there to emerge and see the new heart of the new being, the heart of the new being, but it has to be recognized in order to do that.
Exactly.
And how do you bring your congregation or your, you know, the message to work that in the human being?
In the same way that's been done for thousands of years, you talk about it. The seed is planted. The heart that is prepared wakes up to that seed. Other people see it in the mountains, in the skiing, and they go, ah. But you have to follow that first awakening of going, boy, there's more to this than I first know about. And when you say, what is that? You're just like Moses at the burning bush, and you have just uttered your first prayer. Who are you? Who am I? And that's what I'm trying to expose in our congregation. This is what we are about. It's sort of past patterned after the new emerging tradition that's coming out. We've heard it, the emerging church. We're part of that.
I want to circle back on the question of gifts. We were talking about the Magi or the three wise men coming and bringing gifts, and the fact that the birth of Jesus is a gift to humanity in the larger sense. But is gift-giving kind of taken over the whole thing? And I mean, this huge commercialism that surrounds the holiday now. Colin, why don't you address that? What's your take on the commercialism of Christmas?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I give gifts, I receive gifts, and gifts are a great part of Christmas. I do think that, yeah, in a culture like ours, it's really easy for them to take over the deep meaning of Christmas. And this is part of even what I heard you saying, Bob, too, is we have to peel back the layers that may have kind of built up over years and say, hey, what's really at the heart of this? I mean, the first Christmas, it wasn't in December, and there weren't jingle bells, and Santa Claus wasn't there, and Frosty the Snowman didn't show up. So I think if the gifts are a reflection of that big gift of Jesus Christ, okay, that makes sense. But if it's all about just, wow, how many presents are under the tree, and do I have this thing or that thing, then I think we miss the opportunity of that reflection of that deep meaning of Christmas. So it's hard. Our culture says bye bye bye, get as much as you can. And ultimately, I find, and I think most people find, as we mature over time, what's most important are our relationships with God and our relationships with family and friends. And for me, this Christmas and most Christmases, that's what I look forward to most.
And I'm wondering, Colin and Bob, how do you bring an inspired vision of Christmas to your flock, to your people, to your congregation, and inspire them to, as you say, dig a little deeper, pull away some layers, and come to that deeper meaning of Christmas and carry it through the year?
Yeah. Well, first of all, and kudos to the folks that are part of our gathering. These are people lead less inspiration, I think, to search than a lot of people I've ever met. They're there already, awake, and it's never been a fight for me to get their attention. It's always been, I better be prepared when I'm there, because they have the questions, they have some insight, they have challenges. We meet in a circle, and I operate in the same way the apostles and Jesus did. I start out with the idea, a vision of God, and they argue with me. And at the end, we say, peace be with you.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think for us, one of the things that's helped to recover that deeper meaning of the Christmas story is to mine some of the resources that exist in the Christian tradition. So, for example, this year we're looking at a bunch of Christmas carols, one each weekend, and we say, what are the scriptures that gave rise to that Christmas carol? What were even the circumstances around that? So on the 27th, we'll look at O Come, Emmanuel, and what does it mean that God is with us? And how does that not just communicate to people 2,000 years ago at Jesus' birth, but how does that communicate to us today? We've also done some things like something we call the Advent Conspiracy. It's a large umbrella that we participated in, where instead of thinking about, hey, what sort of gifts are we going to get, what sort of gifts can we give? How can we be more compassionate? How can we serve others? And I think trying to approach it from a number of different ways helps me and helps other people say, oh yeah, there's a lot more to Christmas than just what I see on TV or what I hear on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about some more of the traditions of Christmas. And one of them, one of the teachings from the Bible, is that Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary. But what is the significance that of the virgin birth. Is that have a larger significance in this story?
There's a $64,000 question. Nice work, Chris. Nice work. Okay, you're making us squirm today. The virgin birth, there are obviously, you know, three different accounts of Jesus' birth. And even as I've been reflecting on those over the last couple of weeks, it's amazing to me just how compact they are. In so few words, sometimes I think one of the accounts is 75 words or so to explain this incredible, incredible event. It seems like both with the appearance of the angels, with the virgin birth, what all of that is reinforcing is that this is a great miracle and this is a great gift. I think even probably for me, the deepest part of the story is this idea of incarnation. Again, back to Emmanuel, God is with us, that this space between heaven and earth has collapsed and that God has chosen the way of vulnerability and embodiment in coming from heaven to earth as a human being. What would you say, Bob?
Well, again, like you, I go around and around with it, and every year it's meant something different. It makes me think of a word of something Jesus said in John today, and that is, on that day, Jesus says, you will know that I'm in the Father, you are in me, and I am in you. We are all one. So when I think of the virgin birth and this idea of incarnation, God is already somehow present in me. And as Paul says, we live and move and have our being in this ground of being we call God. So the virgin birth for me is the beginning of each person's journey, where our heart has been emptied of our biases, has been totally repentant, and we go, we have given in, just as Mary, to the will you, and you say, I will. And there your journey begins. For me today, and for a while, that's what the virgin birth means. It's not specifically about Mary. It's about us again. Mm-hmm. But it is a template, an archetype of our own journey.
So in some ways, it becomes a metaphor or something we can use, is what you're saying, to dig deeper, to find that path, that starting point.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's that sense of just that receptivity, that openness to, let it be to me as you have said, that open-handedness, God, my life is yours. What would you choose to do in and through me? For my good and for your glory.
And there in that movement, as you choose to do that, is the gift of the kingdom present for everybody to see.
Well, I have another question about the tradition, and that is, we celebrate it on December 25th. When was Jesus actually born? I know within the Christian community, there's a lot of debate about that even.
Yes, and this is another question that this one wasn't on the seminary final that I recall, but from the little that I've looked at and read, likely in the spring, April, May, something like that. And as with so many things, there were other holidays that then were Christianized, and this idea of, particularly in the Gospel of John, of Jesus as the light makes particular sense here in Sandpoint, when the sun may or may not come up at 8 o'clock and goes down at 3. So that I don't even know when that shift was made to Christmas being celebrated on the 25th. But I love that idea, and we'll celebrate it on Christmas Eve at Cedar Hills, that idea of, the light has come into the world, and we'll have candles. And there is a tremendous power in just reflecting on Jesus Christ, the one who is both is the light and who brings the light and drives the darkness back.
Bob, any thoughts on Christmas in December?
That light metaphor, of course, is very powerful for me also. Means a lot. We can see in the light, and we can't see very well in the dark. So this idea of Jesus coming in at that time, when was his birth? Then I ask the question, but when was the anointing's birth? One is eternal. Jesus was born, I don't know when, But that eternal truth of God has no beginning. And that's what Jesus brought to us, is the eternal dimension. Jesus the man, I don't know. That eternal message has always been here.
You know, Christmas is it's a season that seems to magnify people's happiness, but as well their sadness. The latter being sad, especially if people are feeling isolated or they're having struggles. What words would you have for them at this season? You know, how can this season be turned around for them to give them inspiration?
That's a great question, Chris, because, yeah, they're, while on the one hand, Christmas is so boisterous and there's carols and there's all these holiday parties and a lot of excitement on the outside, for a lot of people, particularly those who have experienced recent loss, it can be a really difficult time. I think one of the things that we try to both talk about and embody is this idea of community, that you are not alone in the midst of that. Particularly for someone, again, reflecting on loss, it can feel very isolating around Christmas because everybody else is happy and celebrating, and here's someone who's feeling set apart or not a part of what's going on. So I think community is part of that. I think the other piece of that is, again, if we look at Jesus Christ as Emmanuel, as God with us, that while that sorrow, that grief may not instantly dissipate, we're not alone even in the midst of that grief because God is with us through his son, Jesus Christ.
Hmm. How do you, that's one of the questions I think that reawakened to me to my calling when I was about 24 years old, in that I was driving through a town in Milton Freewater, and I was quite successful as a young musician, and I had to stop in the middle of a beautiful spring day to watch this young man struggle to get across the road with a walker, and I wondered, why me and why him? During this season, that's a good question. Why are there people suffering? And why are there people who are, on the other hand, full of joy? This is the question we must answer and work out in our society, in our culture, in order to bring the revelation that Jesus brought with him at this time of year to the rest of the world. That's the deal, I think, is how do we heal these things? So your question is, like Colin stated very well, inherently reach out. Mm-hmm. Be with them.
So that leads us to our final question. And first of all, I want to thank both of you for coming in. And we have two more spiritual leaders, I'll call them, coming in right after you leave. That's Father Day from the St. Joseph's Catholic Church and Valerie Milliron from the Sandpoint Quakers. But before you leave, we'd like to ask, and Bob, you mentioned reaching out. How do you reach out to bring in those not only that want to celebrate in community with you, but also might be on that in that place of sorrow or needing of a hand reached out to them? And what about your services for Christmas? Just tell us briefly so that we know.
Sure. Yeah, I think as far as the reaching out, I think the more practical, the better. So, I mean, I think one really easy way, if you know someone who doesn't have a place to be for a Christmas morning or a Christmas dinner, to create room in your living room, to create room around your table. There are obviously lots of other great ways to reach out. You even mentioned one this morning, Susie, with the Toys for Tots. I mean, they're phenomenal ways where we can be the hands and feet of Jesus and do acts of compassion. But I think particularly at Christmas, the more concrete we can make those, the better. Another way obviously is to invite someone to a Christmas Eve service, to be a part of a community. For us at Cedar Hills, we have four Christmas Eve gatherings. So they are at 1 o'clock, 2:30, 4, and 5:30 p.m. They each last about an hour.
And the Cedar Hills Church is where?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Cedar Hills is at 227 McGee Road in Kootenai. So it's just across from the former Coldwater Creek corporate offices.
Okay. And Bob?
I encourage the folks in our gathering to do, reach out in whatever way their gifts are, you know, accustomed to reaching out, and ditto on everything that Colin has said. And we don't have a Christmas Eve service. We're a little small. Some of us are going around to different places, which will be fun for me, get around and hear somebody else, mm-hmm. and see somebody, celebrate with other people. Mm-hmm. But our services are at 615 Oak Street. We begin at 9 in Sunday mornings with a meditation, and the service begins at 9:30.
Each Sunday.
Each Sunday, yes.
And I want to mention along these lines that if you do find yourself alone this Christmas, it, of course, great. You know, we have at least four good choices here of places that people can go to celebrate Christmas. But there is a free community Christmas dinner at the Bonner Gospel Mission on Christmas Day. That's from noon to 3 p.m. And that's at Sandpoint Community Hall. And everyone's welcome to that.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah.
Great. So here's mm-hmm. a chance. We're going to go out and say goodbye to you with a song, a Christmas song. And you have a choice, guys. Andy Williams singing Away in a Manger or Joan Baez singing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. So your choice.
I'm going to go with Joan. Where are you at,
okay. Well, I'll go with you.
Okay.
And we'll be right back with Father Dennis Day of the St. Joseph's Catholic Church and Valerie Milleron of the Sandpoint Friends.
Thank you so much, Colin and Bob.
Thank you. Thanks. Very much.
And that was Joan Baez, O Come, Emmanuel, a fitting song for our second part of our KRFY Morning Show interview. Thanks for tuning in. We have Father Day from the St. Joseph's Catholic Church. I know that.
Good, Susan.
I've got that. And Valerie Milliron from the Sandpoint Quakers to continue our discussion about the true meaning of the season, the reason for the season. And I'm here in the studio with my co-host. I'm Susie Prez, and we're here, Chris Bessler. So,
and let's just jump in on that central question. That's how we approached it in the first half of the show with our other two pastors. And I'll put that question to you, Father Day. What is the true meaning of Christmas for you?
When we celebrate someone's birthday, we celebrate, we honor them as a person, and we celebrate the gift that they are to us. I agree with the previous pastors that it is celebrating the gift that God has given us in His only begotten Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. We celebrate the incarnation of Christ, God becoming man, and heaven joined to earth for our reconciliation and salvation. And that's what we celebrate. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay.
That's okay. Nice and succinct.
Yes.
And in that thought, Father Day, that's what we say we celebrate, but with all of the, I'll say it, commercial and, you know, the things that children and Santa Claus and Jingle Bells and all of that and the hurry-scurry buy gifts and make sure everyone has everything they need, how do you bring that and keep that true spirit of what you just said to a congregation and in your own life and in to your congregation?
Well, in the culture that has, you know, kind of gone overboard and in the commercialization, I mean, I saw Christmas decorations up before Halloween, you know. Somehow, they're you know, in the Catholic Church, we don't celebrate Christmas until, Christmas. You know, you go into our church and we'll have the Advent wreath up, you know, and that's about it. No flowers. It's pretty sparse. But then you come to the church on Christmas and it's fully decorated. And we celebrate Christmas in the Christmas season from December 25th until January 6th, the traditional 12 days of Christmas. And when everyone else is tired of their Christmas carols and they stop singing and we're just starting them, you know, that's just sort of the way we do it. So that's a little counterbalance to the culture, you know, a little countercultural in a sense, to try to put a lid on the commercialization and materialism of Christmas. We have a different way I call it the God perspective, you know, a more balanced approach to life and to the celebration. So that's kind of how we do it.
Mm-hmm. And so in the 12 days of Christmas, it ends with the Epiphany. And we asked our other guests this, but I'd like to ask you the same question. What is the Epiphany?
Epiphany means manifestation, and it's one of a threefold manifestation. Christ is revealed to the Gentiles. The Magi were the Gentiles. They were the non-Jew. They represent us. So Christ is revealed to all of us, you know, to the world. That tells us that Christ came not just for the people of Israel, but for all of us. That's the great thing. That's the manifestation of the Epiphany. The second part of it was the marriage feast at Cana, the manifestation of his power as God and his mastery over the elements. And then the second one actually is the baptism by John in the Jordan. So those are the three parts of the Epiphany.
So the first part of the Epiphany is really where the message becomes clear.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the world. By the way, I was recently in the Holy Land last month and was at the Jordan where Jesus was baptized and was in Bethlehem where Jesus was born. And I went into the Church of the Nativity and I went down into the crypt, to the grotto, where the tradition says that Jesus was actually born. It's a very interesting place. I was in Manger Square with two Christians of they're the Assyrian Church of the East, and they pray in the original Aramaic. And so they chanted the Our Father in the actual words that Jesus used for the Our Father in Manger Square. But I wanted to mention this because the Church of the Nativity was the first one was built by Constantine and destroyed by fire. The second one was built by Justinian, and it was almost destroyed by the Persian invasion in the 7th century. But the Persians came and saw a mosaic of the three magi, the wise men, and they were dressed as Persians. And so they didn't destroy the Church of Nativity. Yeah. So that church has remained intact for all this time because of because of that little fact. I just thought that
since the rule of Roman Emperor Justinian.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. All right.
Valerie, you're with the Sandpoint Friends, or also known as Quakers.
That's right.
And I'd like to pose the same question to you. What is the true meaning of Christmas for you?
Well, I'm enjoying so much going forth because I can say ditto, ditto, ditto. I agree with all of the pastors. It is that of God within us and that promise becoming manifest. And for Quakers, it's the we describe it as the light within. And to know that is freely available. For Quakers, it's available even without any intermediary, without any smells and bells, or however you want to put that. So it's a contemplative Christianity stripped down to its bare bones.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would your take be? Let's revisit a question we asked to the last guest. What would your take be on this big commercialization that happens around Christmas? Is gift giving a big part of the Quaker tradition?
It is not. I did my homework and searched the internet, and the only reference I could find, at least among early Quakers, is George Fox, one of the founders, is saying that, well, on Christmas he went around to widows' homes and gave them food while other people were celebrating Christmas. So Quakers tend to be very low-key, look at every day as an incredible gift from God, and that this is one more incredible gift from God. My children would say that one of the traumas of their youth was getting a small gift on Christmas and, you know, modest celebration. And then they'd have to go back to school and they'd say, well, what did you get for Christmas? Well, I got a Bible with my name engraved on it and somebody else got an Xbox, you know.
But do they put that in perspective now?
I hope so.
Yeah. We want to talk a little bit about some of the traditions of the of the Christmas story. And one of the traditions, and I'd be interested in putting this question to you, Father Day, is the Bible teaches that he was born of the Virgin Mary.
Correct.
Is the virgin birth important in this story? Is it symbolic?
Absolutely. I mean, it's part of Mary's role is that she was prepared for her role in life, like all of us are, you know. But the virgin birth is primarily the fulfillment of prophecy, you know, from Isaiah, and that was seen as the fulfillment of prophecy. And the story again, you know, in Luke's gospel we have the Mary goes to visit Elizabeth, her kinswoman, in Ayin Karim at Zechariah's house, and there she says, Elizabeth says to her, you know, the babe in my womb leapt for joy when your greeting reached my ears, and blessed is she who believed that what the Lord said would be done to her. So that the first beatitude in Luke's gospel is that belief that Mary had, and that was that whole, her whole self was given to God. I mean, that's what's mentioned by the previous group too, but that was that surrender to God. She gave herself entirely to God, and that was the preparation for the coming of the Messiah. So fulfillment of prophecy is what the virgin birth is primarily, I think.
And it sounds like inspiration.
Sure.
Because for
the rest of us.
Exactly.
An example for the rest of us.
You know? Probably an example.
It was particularly hard for Mary in that culture to be carrying child.
It was dangerous for Mary.
Yes.
You know, but it was particularly hard for poor old Joseph. You know?
Yes.
You know? So he's our patron saint here at St. Joseph.
St. Joseph.
So, you know. So. but he was a man, he was a just man, and that was he was responsive to God's will as well.
Mm. Do the Quakers have a different take on the virgin birth?
I think Quakers have no take on the virgin birth. It's more the example of Jesus' life. And so the presents that are given to us are kind of his example, and that's been embodied in Quaker testimonies that have been passed down. And they go by the acronym of SPICE. So it's simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality. As gifts to us, given by the Spirit, and those are our examples, and it's a gift every day.
So let's talk about another tradition, and we talked about this with the last group a little bit. I'm just curious to see if you have a different take on it, but the Bible doesn't actually say when Jesus was born, the actual date, but we do celebrate it on December 25th. Is there a significance to celebrating it this time of year for in your traditions and your beliefs? Valerie, why don't you take that one?
No. It isn't, except that I thought Colin gave a brilliant answer with the light. The light is an important metaphor for Quakers. So it is like a tremendous gift to be given that reminder in the darkness and to celebrate with lights, the external lights as a reflection of the light we have within.
The first feast in Christianity is Easter. And, of course, that was practiced, that was celebrated from the beginning because it was, you know, fixed with the Jewish Passover. So that was something. The development of Christian came much later, but by 336 it was celebrated in Rome by Constantine on the December 25th. Before that, the pagan emperor Aurelius talked about the Sol Invictus, which he, about the middle of the 3rd century, the 200s, and the unconquerable sun, that was it, the solstice sort of thing. In the 300s, the Archbishop of Milan, Ambrose, talked about, well, we have our own unconquerable sun, and we'll celebrate him. And so it was, you know, it's sort of there was the other feast was the Saturnalia, which was kind of a raucous Roman...
Big party.
But it wasn't an annual feast. It occurred occasionally. But one of the other things about it is Christians didn't like that, and certainly the fathers never said anything that they liked it. But what happened was, it's sort of like, you know, when the Ku Klux Klan has a parade, and there's a group of people that oppose them, they're called counter-demonstrators. Well, the Christians were the counter-demonstrators to the Saturnalia. But the thing is, the Saturnalia disappeared, and the counter-demonstration continues to this day.
It's an interesting way to see Christmas, isn't it?
It's a different dynamic from what you usually hear, that we just adopted pagan customs. It's not true.
Right.
It's not. The fathers don't attest to that. The writers, the early Christian writers, don't testify to that at all. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's a different dynamic, you know?
That's amazing,
we won.
Actually.
You know, that's the thing. And that's, we celebrate that, too. I want to tell something about, we have a family who's fairly affluent. And years ago, they told their children that the Christ child only got three gifts, and so each of you will only get three gifts as a way to.
Well, I can't get more than the Christ child.
Yeah, it's a way to kind of temper things down. I thought that might
wonderful. Be good advice for parents listening.
Exactly.
A nice way to put the whole thing in perspective.
Instead of 181 things on your wish list on Amazon.
Yes.
We could all use a little bit of that perspective.
So another tradition, and we did talk about with the first group of Christmas, is the Advent calendar. What is the Advent calendar?
It's sort of a countdown to Christmas. I mean, basically, Advent is that season from the four Sundays before Christmas. And so it varies in length, but there's always four Sundays. And for each day of Advent, the Advent calendar, there's different forms of it. And it's just a way to mark that season of Advent and in preparation for the coming feast of Christmas. It's just it's a fairly late, invention. But
a fairly recent one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there specific, do you teach that there are specific meditations or prayers that should be...
No, it's all personal devotional. We give out little booklets for Advent for families to help them with that, but we don't. There's nothing set except for the regular calendar of readings and for the daily masses and so forth. Yeah. So
and for Quakers, is the Advent is it a big tradition?
Well, Advent is preparing, and so for Quakers, it's the 365 days a year of preparation. Because we never know the time or the day or the hour. And so it's kind of a continuous process.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to put another question to you that we talked about with the last group as well. Christmas seems to magnify both the happiness and joy that people feel in their lives, but for some folks it also magnifies the sadness. And for some folks, I think it does both at the same time. Interestingly enough, as the others were talking about it, I was thinking, this time of year, I always feel sadness for family members that are gone. That's probably just natural. But what words do you have for people that are feeling isolated or having struggles at this time of year? What would the Quaker tradition have to say to these folks, Valerie?
Well, I think of Paul and Silas in prison singing, that it's our spirit that we need to come alive, and we do that by waiting on the Lord and humble opening our hearts. A favorite Bible passage to me is in Ezekiel, when it says, I'll give you a new heart, a new heart if you open your heart. The old heart of stone can be turned into a heart of flesh. And so it's that great promise to us that if we sit and wait on the Lord, we will be filled. And, you know, it's a knock, seek and you'll find, knock and the door will be opened. That God is available and is there, and I think that's one of the great gifts of Quakerism, is to kind of rekindle that contemplative side of Christianity, as Colin and Bob were talking in the last half hour about the mystical We're so missing the mystical in our contemporary society. Mm-hmm.
Father Day, same question to you. What would you have to say to the folks that are feeling sadness and isolated?
You know, those of us that are old enough and have lost loved ones can always get in touch with that. And, you know, we think back to happier times when our parents were alive, perhaps, and, you know, our childhood when, you know, we remember our Christmases of our childhood and the happiness that surrounded them. And sometimes those significant people in our lives are gone, and there is that sense of loneliness. And for some people, there's no one to fill that void, and there's a sense of isolation and loneliness that creeps in. And I think the answer to that is to reach out to others. I mean, you know, get off your duff and get. I'm not supposed to swear.
You did.
Duff is okay. Yeah,
but get off your duff and get. You know, go out and go to make a parish family, a church family that you have some people that can you can surround you with love, and then to be. And not to be sad for the loss of your loved ones, but be grateful to God that you had them in your life at all, and that they have contributed to your happiness and to your well-being. And they wouldn't want you to be moping around either. You know, they would want you to do something. You know, establish a parish family. That's what church is good for, is that sense of solidarity and companionship on the life's journey. And that's where you need it, especially this time of year you need it, you know? Mm-hmm.
When Valerie was talking about opening your heart, it just dawned on me, unless your heart is a little bit broken, it's hard to have it be open.
Oh, that's good.
And so that made sense. And mm-hmm. I think that is true. As you said, Chris, you're happy this time of year, but it also has both sides. You start reflecting on those that you've lost or other things that may be lost. And so it is an opportunity, as you said, Father Day, to reach out and also open up and look for your parish, your family, your congregation, your community.
Yeah, I think Father Day made a really good point that we open up by giving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I want to mention again that, of course, there will be services available to folks all around town at different churches, including yours. But there is a free community Christmas dinner on Christmas Day that the Bonner County Gospel Mission puts on. It's at noon to 3 p.m. at Sandpoint Community Hall. Everybody's invited to that. So if you do find yourself alone this Christmas, that's would be a great place to go and share food. And a feast is kind of part of the season, isn't it? Sharing a meal with people seems to be one of our most human ways that we connect with each other.
We had our big community Christmas soup kitchen last Friday. Traditionally, we 4 to 6 is the soup kitchen at St. Joseph's, but we'll have soup kitchen on Christmas Day as well. But it won't be the big stuff, but it'll be a place for
available.
People to go.
What hours is it?
4 to 6.
Oh, from 4 to 6.
So
okay.
You got the noon to 3 at Community Hall and 4 to 6 at St. Joseph. Okay. You could be eating all day.
That's right. All day.
Could be. And we didn't touch on this at the top of the hour, but I wanted to come back now and Father Day, if you will, tell us about St. Joseph's Catholic Church and also the services that you will be having for Christmas.
St. Joseph's, Mass began to be celebrated in Sandpoint about 1895 or so. The church was established in 1904. The first church built in 1907. The new church was built began in 2007, finished in 2008, dedicated in 2009. It's the Lincoln on Ontario, and Mass is for Christmas. Are the 6 p.m. Christmas Eve Mass for the family Mass. That's our largest gathering. With all the children and all that. Traditional midnight Mass, Christ Mass, where we get the word Christmas, mm-hmm. at midnight, and then 10 o'clock on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. So, and everyone is invited. Mm-hmm. And we have a gift for families when they come. So mm-hmm. nice. We're planning a big, big Christmas.
All right. Thank you. And Valerie, tell us about the Sandpoint Quakers, about what the church is about a little bit, and as well what how you may be celebrating Christmas.
Well, the church is at 1025 Alder Street in Sandpoint, and it's a small meeting house. We gather in a circle in silence, usually for an hour, broken by messages if someone's inspired to speak. And we're simply waiting worship. We do have a Christmas Eve celebration. Oh, by the way, it's 10 o'clock Sunday each Sunday, 1025 Alder Street. On Christmas Eve, we're going to meet at 5 and for a half an hour of waiting worship. And then there's some simple songs and sharing and a potluck gathering. So, sharing supper together.
And is everyone invited?
Everybody's invited, okay. Absolutely.
And there's a potluck, so bring a little dish if you come as well.
Yeah, there'll probably be plenty.
Yeah, okay.
Dish or no dish.
Dish or no dish.
So it's time for us to say goodbye, and thank you so much, Father Dave from St. Joseph's Catholic Church and Valerie Milliron from the Sandpoint Quakers for joining us and sharing your vision and your ideas and inspiration for the reason for the season.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us. It was wonderful.
Yeah. We're going to go out with a song. This is Andy Williams. We're out of time, Chris. We can't do any more talking. This is Andy Williams, Away in a Manger, and we'll be back next week.
We do have time to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. This is Andy Williams, Away in the Manger, in a Manger. Have a beautiful day, and...